Ullman handed them each a weapon from one of the many piles of the particle beams. The technicians had been making the devices for so long that they had nearly run out of storage space. Pistols and rifles filled every recess, sat stacked on steel shelves from the floor to the 20-foot ceiling above, filled drawers and bureaus. A weapons plant with no one to use its product. Until now.
I'm quite surprised. Usually fatigue sets in after any exertion at all. But I actually feel vital.
Well, if you keep eating the way you did last night, your body's gonna get stronger by the hour.
They walked several hundred feet and then stopped.
There, that black rock-like formation over there, 300 feet away. Now, watch. You flip the activation lever here on the right side, and then just sight up your target. I'll start with the lowest energy release. This dial, with the number 0 on top, goes, as you can see if you look at your particle beam pistols, up to 10. This means from narrowest and most lethal beam to widest, most expansive ray, but with the least power. Here, like this.
You can walk through the hole that thing made. And this is the lowest power of the smallest one. I want to see the big stuff.
Right, right. Now, the rifle particle accelerator works much the same way, but its range and destructive capabilities are greater. Now, it's important to stabilize this, as movement could have disastrous results. Absolute control is important with these weapons. Look through your scopes. There's a tall, cone-like structure 40 feet high about 2 miles away.
They found it readily through their high-power scopes. Ullman lay down, getting his gray smock even blacker from the ground dust. He sighted up and again pulled the trigger ever so slightly. The beam of blackness hung in the air like a wire the entire 2 miles to the object. The disintegration was total and instantaneous.
There is quite a loud explosion, but not from the conventional explosive power of dynamite or gunpowder. Here, the nuclei of the molecular structure, as they collapse, cause a roar as the atoms smash together.
Wait, where's the
The free fighters tested the weapons for over 2 hours, getting Ullman to explain every detail of firing, maintenance, and repair. Finally, as a dark storm grew overhead, Rock, his men, and Ullman headed back to the underground silos. Ullman's gait was becoming strong, almost cocky. They again ate like hogs, talking and laughing with the technicians, who were slowly and shyly opening up to the Americans. Even Perkins and Lang seemed to be faring a little better.
Look, Rock, my leg. Can you believe it? In just 4 hours.
That's amazing. Both the swelling and discoloration is almost gone.
Yeah, and I don't feel feverish for the first time in days. It's a goddamn miracle, Rock. I'll be honest with you, I thought maybe...
I know, Lang. Me too. How are you feeling, Perkins?
You know, I think I'm actually starting to feel a little better. I can breathe slightly in my right lung now, and the pain is subsiding. We should get one of these for every damn free city in America. It's incredible. With these kinds of devices, man's lifespan could be doubled, even.
He's right, Rock. How's the patient coming? As if I had anything to do with it. It's amazing, Rock. 5,000 years of medical evolution come to this. This 10-second ray. Push a button and zap. No more illness. I can't get over it. My mind keeps looking for the loophole.
If there's a loophole, don't tell my lung about it.
You know, in many ways, Rock, I think this medical discovery of the technicians could prove to be far more important than the weaponry.
Well, I respect your opinion, Slade, and I'm sure ultimately that will prove to be true when we can throw away all these goddamn weapons once and for all. But until then, it's these black beam weapons that are going to make the Reds sit up and take notice.
The next day, Rock took Ullman aside.
I want you to pick 4 of your strongest men. Get some of those particle beam pistols and come with me. I think it's time you learned how to live as free men.
What do you mean?
If you are to survive, you must all learn to fend for yourselves. To hunt, like men.
But Vorn was the hunter. He had been trained to...
Vorn is dead. Soon my people and I will have to leave. We can leave you food, but it will be gone before long. You must learn the ways of survival. When I was young, I was forced to survive on my own. I know it's not easy, but I learned then that only what each man does will keep him alive. We are born into this world alone and go out of it alone. No one can be counted on other than yourself.
All right, Ted Roxon. We will learn from you. But don't expect us to enjoy this knowledge acquisition.
Of course not. You're not supposed to.
Within an hour, they were back up on the crusted black surface. With Rock in the lead and Ullman right beside him, the other four technicians kept spinning around, expecting something to attack at any moment. They kept their hands on their holsters, ready to draw at any second.
Now tell me, where did Vorn go when he hunted?
He said he had gone north, about 20 miles. It was some sort of fairly untouched brushland that extended for 100 miles.
North it is, then. Come on, let's move out.
He kept a slow pace, knowing the technicians couldn't keep up with his long stride, but kept it going. He was going to work them as hard as he could. When the team left, they had to be able to survive on their own, both for their sakes and for America's. Rock couldn't afford to let anything happen to them. He led them for hours through the black land as it very slowly grew grayish. After about 3 hours, they took a rest stop, and Rock gave them each 2 sips of water. They waited 5 minutes, then moved out. Rock could feel their eyes burning into the back of his head, but he had discovered long ago that there was no man on Earth who liked training missions.
Mr. Roxon?
Yes, Maper.
Are you sure there aren't any monsters out here? That is what we have been told for generations.
Oh, there can be monsters up here. But it is up to everybody to face them and conquer them. And I'm bringing you all up here to do just that. Ullman is not the only one learning today. What if he dies? You'll all be back where you started. You must learn to take control, each of you, to be responsible for yourselves. That way, no one man will mean the life or death of your community. Do you understand?
I understand.
All right, then. Everybody, there's no game here. Nothing that lives would be foolish enough to venture out on this, except humans, of course. You must go beyond it, as Vorn did, to the edges where game will come.
They walked on for hours, Rock subtly picking up the pace as they continued.
We should start heading back. The sun is starting to set.
Oh, we're not going back. We're out for days now. Didn't I mention that?
But there's no food, no blankets, no anything.
I know.
They marched until dark, the air growing steadily colder. Rock had them go another hour or so in darkness. The western sky was alive with a billion flashing stars, the half-moon tinged with strontium green clouds rising across the vastness. Soon, they came to a little valley in the gray sand that they could rest their backs against.
Here, this is a good place to camp. Now, I like to find a nice cozy spot. Like right here. Lean up against a nice slope and make a little dirt blanket.
The technicians stared at the mad American, their eyes popping from their heads as he covered his legs and stomach with handfuls of the soil.
It's quite warm, really. When you get cold, give it a try.
You entered us as factors in this ill-fated exploration, Ullman.
But as the night wore on and the plains air grew chillier and chillier, they imitated their survivor mentor and shoveled handfuls of dirt onto their lower bodies. It was still quite warm. Soon, they felt warm again. Their shivering and shaking melted under the heat of the sun-soaked sands. They grinned at each other.
Maybe this Roxon really does have some overriding factors in his equation.
Ullman covered himself in sand up to the neck and was staring with wonder at the flashing sky above. He had never really looked at it before. The next morning they rose as the sun slowly edged up into the jagged pink sky. Roxon gave them each 2 sips of water from one of the canteens he had brought, and they moved on. The terrain changed over the next few hours, growing lighter and lighter, until brownish grasses and small cacti began appearing. The land grew rich quickly then, and before they knew it, they were walking through fields of brush and flowers, and small trees stood in cool groves, beckoning. The technicians stared around in total fascination. The world outside wasn't all black.
Shh. Now do what I do. You mustn't let your prey see you. You must stay downwind of it, too.
But what is it you see out there? I see nothing.
There. By that thorn bush, about 500 yards away, just at the base. Some sort of small mammal-like creature. Raccoon, maybe.
Ah! I see it!
There it is!
Your weapons are almost too powerful. We want to kill the game, not blow it up. Is there any way to set a pencil-thin beam without creating an implosion in the target?
Yes. This power transformer switch on the base, it reduces the charge down to just its own energy. Works more like a laser, cutting through objects, but not creating the imploding reaction.
Roxon carefully knelt down and took the rifle in his arms, laying down flat on the dirt. He rested both elbows on the ground after having opened the tripod on the front end of the barrel and sighted along the long scope. The technicians lay down alongside Rock, spaced about 5 feet apart, and set their rifles like him.
Now pay attention to your breath and make sure your arms are steady. And... now, let's see what we got.
Rock jumped to his feet and moved at a half run to the animal he had aimed at. The technicians followed along, racing on their much smaller legs. Roxon reached the dark, thorn-covered bush and reached down, proudly holding up some sort of half-skunk, half-raccoon creature with thick gray fur, black and white stripes, and fangs the size of a Doberman's. The shot had penetrated its chest, and the sizzling fur released a small trickle of blood through the penny-sized hole.
Excellent shot, Ted Roxon. This opens a whole new world for us. Why, if we could go out on our own and be self-sufficient...
That's just what you're doing. You ready to bag some of your own game?
I must try.
Look for movement, for something. A branch moving against the wind. Let your instinct guide you. You'll see. It's inside you all. The hunter. Just let it come out.
Ullman breathed out and tried to feel what Roxon was saying. He let the sight lazily drift among the small trees. There, he suddenly saw motion, some sort of spotted deer creature.
Did I hit it? I don't see anything.
I don't know, let's check it.
They all rushed forward. This time, the technicians nearly kept up with Roxon on their thin legs. Ullman looked around at the spot at which he had fired.
Nothing.
Oh no? I guess this thing just died of natural causes while we were walking by.
Ullman walked over to where Rock stood. There, behind a bush, the creature lay, a bloody gash in its side.
You've got to go after him. Often, an animal won't die immediately unless it's a kill shot. They'll run, anywhere from feet to miles. And that's also when they're at their meanest. That's the other most important knowledge in hunting tracking.
It's still moving!
Also, if an animal is still alive, don't let it suffer. Now, we can't take this with us, but we can make it so it'll still be here when we get back.
He showed them how to gut the animal, bleed it, and then hang it high in a tree branch to avoid the clutches of other predators.
We'll get it on the way back. But in this way, you don't have to carry extra meat with you. Multiply your possible kills on a single outing.
They headed across the green and brown, slightly more hilly terrain, the other technicians bagging a kill apiece, which they gutted and hung on their own. Roxon standing by, but not helping. They spent the night under the stars. This time, Rock showed them how to build a fire in the hills to keep warm and keep nightly fanged visitors away. They stayed up until the moon had visited the sky and then gone home again, talking with Roxon about the world, about survival. Reason knew that their very lives depended on learning these lessons well and on becoming tough. They had to be 100 times tougher than they were now. The technicians began to actually enjoy the harsh life. They sat and talked and shared their common heritage with Roxon. Rock told them how Americans were working together to free the United States. Slowly, a warm friendship grew between Ullman and Roxon. Different as they were, they shared something in common. They were both leaders. Inside each man burned something brighter than the average flame. Something that led man into new avenues, not just trampling the old. As small as Ullman and the others were, Rock could see that they were growing inside. They had been led down the wrong road. Now the neurosis, the self-doubt of the entire race, was wearing off through the hardships of the real world. There was just one more lesson that Ullman must learn before the race could truly begin to change. The next day, they were on the hunt again. The land now was almost bountiful. They had come nearly 40 miles from the silos and marched through rounded hills covered with a dark orange grass and low purple bushes covered with long, prickly thorns. The technicians were in awe. They had never seen so much life before.
It is amazing, Roxon. We honestly believed that the entire world had been made black. But to see so much life, I... What was that?
Get down!
Neighbor!
The huge predator grabbed Neighbor by the neck and lifted him as if he were a doll, immediately running off into the woods. The others hadn't had time to respond. Even Rock had just raised his pistol when the 300-pound monster was gone. The other technicians stared after the fleeing beast with shock on their thin mouths.
Neighbor! It got Neighbor!
Snap out of it! This is the reality of life out here. There are many things that will try to kill you, eat you. It's not a question of just going out and picking dinner as if it was there for your benefit. If you hunt, others will hunt you. That is the way. You must be prepared at all times to kill or die.
Yes. Yes, you are right, Ted Roxon. We cannot fall into the old ways of self-pity. We must become fighters. I am going to get it.
He marched forward with his pistol held hip high, not even looking back to see if the others were following. Rock moved closely behind. Then, the others, following in back of him, huddled together, searching the terrain, the trees and bushes with their terror-stricken eyes, waiting for the next attack. With Ullman in the lead, they walked through thickening woods for an hour, following the blood drops from Napier's body. The bark on the trees grew thick and turned almost reddish. The ground became covered with some sort of toadstool fungus, as big as pumpkins, and twisted into gnarled black and brown shapes.
Here. This is where the creature is.
Rock watched approvingly. Ullman was learning to track. With his own particle beam pistol at the ready, Roxon let Ullman continue. There was only one way to become a man. The hard way. Ullman pushed the bushes ahead of him carefully aside, walking as quietly as he could. Somehow, his ancient instincts were opening up, giving him an internal knowledge that he didn't know he had. Ullman walked forward toward the sound and stepped into a clearing surrounded by rotting logs. There it was, the black-furred cat. One large white spot on either side of its barrel chest, its ivory-white fangs tearing into Napier's guts. Its face was red with the blood of the prey. The victim's entire throat, chest, and stomach had been torn out and eaten. Ullman felt sick to his stomach for a moment and instantly realized that he had seconds to live. He raised the pistol just as the beast jumped up and rushed toward him. He aimed it in his trembling hands, then froze. He felt his muscles stiffen with fear. The creature had already killed Napier. How could he stop it? He looked around, but Roxon wasn't there. The creature sped up, snarling, its big body breaking into a run. It reared back on its powerful haunches and leapt from 12 feet away. Trembling, the technician leader let the pistol fall to his side. He stood there in a daze. He had killed it. He, Ullman, had destroyed the monster.
Good shot!
Roxon! Where were you? I was almost negated by the creature!
Almost. I was right behind you, Ullman. I couldn't shoot it. You had to. So you could learn something about yourself. That you're strong. That you have power. Now, you're a man.
I think I understand. It was necessary for my training. You are a far deeper and wiser man than I had realized.
No, Ullman, I was you when I was a young man. I know what you're going through, the tests of courage and cowardice that each man must experience and pass or fail in life. I know that you and all your people have it in you. It's just been suppressed for so long. But you must live in the world.
Yes, Roxon. You're accurate. Courage equals death challenge divided by depth of experience times constant 0.3278885.
Yeah. Something like that.
They found a large pole to carry the man-eater on and tied it up so that it hung upside down. Two of the technicians took turns at the back while Roxon held up the front of the beast. Slowly, they headed back to the silos with their prize catch. and more. A changed Ullman. A man who would really be able to lead his people for the first time.